Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you-know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angi to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angi app or visit Angi.com today. You can do this when you Angi that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi there, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another Ion Travel Podcast. This week, we're in Cleveland. All stereotypes aside, our flight wasn't suddenly diverted here. We're making a return visit to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as to Cleveland itself. I'm on the shores of Lake Erie as I speak to Greg Harris, who runs the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, on the music that changed America and still drives it today. Then I'll dig deeper into the vaults with Nwaka Onwusu, the Rock and Roll Hall's chief curator, on how they collect and then preserve more than 1 million artifacts. And if you think it's all rock and roll, think again. I'll sit down with Andre Grimelet, the president and CEO of the Cleveland Orchestra. And finally, you can't talk about Cleveland without talking about baseball. It's not the Indians anymore. It's the Guardians. And I've got to admit, I'm still not used to that name. But the legacy of the team remains strong. And Jeremy Feeder, the Guardians historian, stops by with the memories of past seasons. And of course, as it happens every year, the hopes for this year. Batting first, from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Greg Harris.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic, Peter, and welcome back to Cleveland. And as noted, we are inside the actual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, six floors of the history of our
lives.
We're
in your studio.
We're in the radio studio right here.
What a coincidence. A radio show in a radio studio.
You and your crew know your way around this gear. Why don't you just stick around and do every show from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? We'd love to have you.
I would love to do that. Seriously, because you're all set up. Plus the exhibits, you'll have to get me into the studio from the exhibits because you change them all the time. You have your regular exhibits, but the new ones, the Beatles is amazing.
Yeah, you know, we always tell the story of rock and roll in the museum. Of course, the roots of it, blues, gospel, country.
But it actually started here. Yeah. I mean, the word rock and roll,
yeah.
Right? Alan Freed.
It was,
and I knew his son Lance.
Yes, he was in the music business.
He was at A&M Records. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the rock and roll was always used in songs as a euphemism in the 20s, 30s, 40s, but Alan Freed in the 50s really popularized it as the term for this sound of youth culture and the mixing of R&B, country, blues, and all that stuff. But we tell that story here every day, and then we do special featured exhibits. And as you mentioned, our major exhibit right now is all about the Beatles. It's about those amazing Let It Be recording sessions.
Is that 1969?
Yes, and it's those may have watched the docuseries by Peter Jackson,
which is amazing.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Amazing. So we worked with the Beatles themselves, with Paul, with Ringo, with the estates of Lennon and the estates of Harrison, as well as Peter Jackson, to create this exhibit. And we tell the story of those sessions, and then you go on the rooftop itself and see them performing larger than life. The audio is unbelievable, and it just takes you to that moment in time.
Here's the thing that always blows me away. I forget, and I think so many people forget, when they broke up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, there's been a narrative out there for decades that it was so acrimonious as it was happening. In this film footage, as Peter Jackson shows us, they were actually really in a creative moment. They were enjoying each other's company for the most part. It wasn't like divorced people living in the same house. They were creating amazing music together, and there's such joy in it. And he told that story in the docuseries, and that's what we tell in this exhibit.
And it's a pretty big deal.
Well, it's the Beatles, right? The most impactful, influential rock band in the entire history of the world. And then it's here at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the only place in the world that has this exhibit, and done with the collaboration of all the parties involved, including Apple Corps Limited, which is still in existence and still represents their interest. So we had everybody at the table, and we opened this thing this spring. It's open now. Visitors can come all summer long and enjoy it. And we can't wait to share this with the world.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about storytelling.
It really is. You know, we like to say that the artifacts support the story. You see the guitars, the clothing, the studio notes, all those things. But what happens with the great stories is they trigger that emotional reservoir that you have from listening to this music for your entire life, who you were with, when you fell in love, when your heart was broken, the greatest road trip of your life. And you know what? When you push play on the song Get Back, suddenly all that washes over you.
Exactly. Let's go back to when my heart was broken. No, let's not do that. I mean, you know, there's a museum of, I probably don't have the title right, but there was one overseas, or there was one in California, the Museum of Failed Relationships.
Oh.
I'm not making this up. There's a Museum of Failed Relationships.
Do they have a Hall of Fame?
And you know what? Wait. And when you think of that title, it's like, probably not a good place to go on your first date. Right?
No, a little dark.
But from a timeline perspective, you can come here to the Rock Hall and really gauge your entire personal history against the timeline of the music.
You can, and that goes for fans and also artists. When artists visit us and we walk through the museum with them, they see the artists they admired as kids. They see the ones that where their heart was broken and where they formed their own vision of the world. And then they see their own stuff. They're interested in making sure that it's still here. But what I love is seeing them as fans, and we are all fans. This is the music that we walk through our life with. We go back to at hard times, at good times, at special times, and it's all alive here at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
And you're here because you're a fan.
Hands down, I'm a fan. I grew up like everybody else in the 70s, listening to both AM radio and FM radio, so oldies and contemporary. Punk rock changed my world.
What was oldies for you in the 70s?
They were playing Chubby Checker. And songs like, and even, you know, Otis.
We just lost Bobby Rydell.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And he was actually performing up until recently with Fabian and, who's in the Beach Movies with Lynette Funicello. Bobby
Darin?
Bobby Darin was Bobby Rydell's mentor.
Yeah. So they're, you know, amazing, a great Philly artist, great East Coast, which is where I grew up. And in that part of the world, as you're, you know this from being a traveler, but in some parts of the world, history isn't long in the past. You walk through Philadelphia, you see the spots where Ben Franklin was, you see the spots where the Continental Congress met, and they're very much alive. It's not like it was a couple hundred years ago. It's part of life today, and it's still there. And I think music does that too in some cities. The old mixes with the new really seamlessly, and that's a great thing for all of us because it doesn't happen in a vacuum.
You know, you mentioned Philadelphia. When you go through those museums in Philadelphia, you are reminded instantly of what a young country we still are. Yeah. When you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you're reminded about how really young we all are because we're still living that history. I'm alive to remember that.
No, you're right. It is, you know, in our lifetime, right? The Beatles came and went and their legacy stayed. And you go through all these other bands. But you're right. In Cleveland, you know, we should mention, you talked about Alan Freed, but Cleveland wanted the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Cleveland built this museum. There's a great civic partnership that got it opened. It's been open now for 27 years. 13 million people have visited. They've come here and experienced, you know, their soul opening up to their history and to the history of rock and roll. And they come, they stay in our hotels, they hang out, and they just have a blast.
But you go through this museum, you get emotional. There's a connection.
There's a connection. You remember... again, your best times, some of your worst times, you remember the people that you were with. And there is an emotion. This music doesn't happen just as sound. This music happens as a companion to our lives and to our hearts. And it really does. They say that, music is a window to your soul. And rock and roll is the music for these generations. This is our music, and this speaks to us.
I find it interesting to note, and we talked about this the last time you were on the show, that before you were here, you were at Cooperstown. You were at the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm very jealous now. It's a twofer for you. You got lucky in both.
You know, I'm very fortunate, right? You could quote Lou Gehrig and say that I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. But to work at these two places, 14 years in Cooperstown at the National Baseball Hall of Fame in that wonderful village.
With Jane Clark?
Yes, wonderful leader. Chair of the board, a great vision and benefactor to the museum and to that village. And then to come out here and connect with rock and roll, which was a big part of my past. I owned a record store. I road managed bands. And then the other part is both of these places, both baseball and rock and roll, they speak to a very broad-based audience. It doesn't matter if you're from, you know, Bangor, Maine, or from San Diego, or from London, Ontario, or London, England. Well, not so much on baseball at London, England. But if you're from those places, you get rock and roll, and then baseball speaks to you.
Greg, as you walk through the hall here, and I know you can take a lot of stuff for granted because you live here, right? Mm-hmm. But what's the one exhibit? I'm going to ask this question two ways. What's the one exhibit that surprises most people the most, that they're not expecting to see?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think that...
Because you know you're going to see Jimi Hendrix guitar, okay? I got that part.
Yeah, you're going to see the Supremes, you're going to see James Brown, you're going to see the Stones, you're going to see the Beatles, you're going to see those pieces. The one that probably surprises them the most as they come through, boy, I think that some are surprised. We have this thing on our second floor. It's called the Garage, and it's where you can actually play instruments. You can plug in Fenders, Telecasters, Strats.
You can bring your own?
Well, no, we provide them.
Oh, my God.
Real instruments you plug in and play. And then there's a room there that's our studio where visitors jam with each other. And I think they don't expect that when they come to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But the joy that it brings, the connection that it brings. And then when artists visit us, the guys from Metallica were out here just before the pandemic. They were in there jamming with visitors.
Come on.
So talk about unexpected, life-changing, and really affirmation of your love and passion and your belief that they're regular human beings. Really cool. That garage is off the charts, and we're really proud of it.
Okay, stupid question. Has anything recordable come out of that?
You know, a lot of cell phone videos going up to being posted, but we do go up there pretty regularly. And now that the pandemic, some of our constraints before of not touching things or all those sort of things that we've sort of moved past that and we're able to do it. This place is alive again. And what's really fun in that room is you'll frequently get a family. And let's say the mom played bass in a college band. The kids haven't seen her play. So she's up there playing bass or the dad's behind a drum kit for the first time in 20 years and his family sees him in a whole different light. That's really a blast. And we love making those moments happen. There will be a moment sometime, you know, in the next couple days when 10 people will be together that have never met singing Let It Be together inside that room because they came for the Beatles and it's a chance to connect.
It just happens.
Yeah, just happens.
Now let's talk about the inductions. How does someone get inducted? Who votes? And you've had some recent inductees, right? Mm-hmm. Foo Fighters, yeah. Right? And then they just lost their drummer.
Yeah, very sad. They were inducted in October. And what an amazing set, amazing induction. They then performed as the finale. They played Get Back with Paul McCartney on our stage, and it's out there on the internet. You can
McCartney
watch it.
McCartney was with
them? McCartney's with them. God. McCartney inducted the band, and they did. They lost their drummer far too young. Taylor Hawkins, a really wonderful, warm person, and just an unfortunate loss for everybody in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame family and the Rock family. For us, the induction process, first and foremost, it relates to impact and influence.
But let me go back for one second. In the Baseball Hall of Fame, It's the baseball writers who vote, right? And you can only be nominated. You have an eligibility window, and if you miss that one, you're not in, right? Yeah,
that's right.
Same thing here?
No, here, to be eligible, you had to have made a record 25 years ago. So there's a historic perspective. In baseball, you need to be retired for 5 years to be eligible. That's the perspective. We do 25 years here from your first release. And then the voting body, instead of it being the baseball writers, it's all the other living inductees is the biggest voting block. So Smokey Robinson votes, Bruce Springsteen votes, Bono votes, and Madonna, and so on. Then there's also a number of historians, industry people, record executives that augment the inductees in the vote. There's about a little over 1,000 voters. The ballots go out to those 1,000. This year's ballot has 17 on the ballot, and they vote.
Is that a typical number?
Yeah, it's usually between 15 and 19 on the ballot. And I should say the ballot itself is created by a nominating committee. It's about 26 people. The nominating committee looks at your impact and influence. Did you take the art form in a new direction? Did you do something innovative? It's not about chart hits. It's not about
sales.
And which is why, you know, the Velvet Underground is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they went in before some artists that sold many more records, but they were highly influential on all others that started bands.
Now, of the 17, mm-hmm. You've already had one artist saying she doesn't want it. Dolly Parton.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. And, you know, we did issue a statement after Dolly mentioned that. And, you know, what the statement was, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, was to the effect of one of the reasons that Dolly is so beloved is because of her humility. And this is yet another example of that she felt she wasn't worthy. And we also wanted folks to know.
And when is the voting being announced?
It will be announced in early May. And
what happens if she wins?
Well, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, we honor the roots of our music. Blues, gospel, country, R&B comes together. Inside our museum, Bill Monroe is inducted. Hank Williams is inducted. Johnny Cash is inducted. So there's a legacy of artists that really fit. They've been impactful and influential. And we believe that Dolly fits that category. And when she issued that statement, we had already released the 1,000-plus ballots. In fact, they've been out for weeks.
Sit
and
back,
many had
relax.
Come back. So let's see how the votes stack up.
My thanks to Greg. So how do you first find, then preserve, more than a million rock and roll artifacts? And what makes a rock and roll artifact?
Lyrics written on a paper towel by the Foo Fighters? Tina Turner's piano? LL Cool J's car? How about Carole King's piano? And we're just getting started. And Nwankwo Onwuzo, the chief curator, has just a few stories to tell.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
How are you?
Peter, it is amazing. I'm doing great. It's awesome to have you.
Listen, it's awesome to be here. It's awesome to come back. I come back about once every 3 years because I can't get enough.
Yes.
I mean, look, you're either the most popular person at this museum or the most hated, because either everybody wants to come in or you want to get something.
Yes, right.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, what do you look for in trying to organize and curate the exhibits?
Gosh, you know, being here at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I am falling in so many big, large footsteps. There have been some amazing chief curators that have come before me who have collected and have made this archive and collection so robust. So for me, as we're acquiring new artifacts, it's definitely keeping up with the times. You know, music is constantly changing. So it's what's happening now, what's right here, right now, as well as what are some of those things that we're uncovering from the past? What stories haven't we told yet? What is missing? What stones haven't been unturned? And so really combing through this museum, looking at exhibitions that we've curated in the past and seeing what narratives have yet to be told is really the exciting part of my job.
Of course, you got a little bit of a background. You're an LA native, which meant you know the music scene from there.
Yes.
And you came from the Grammy Museum.
Yes, absolutely. Came from the Grammy Museum, was there for 10 and a half years, and truly started from the bottom. Now we're here, like a Drake song, and really got to see the makings of, you know, how the museum functions from the marketing side, the development things, and obviously the curatorial pieces and what people gravitate towards. And so being—
Okay, what do they gravitate towards?
Yeah, I mean, they love, I mean, for me, and I'm going to speak for myself, lyrics, seeing the writings from different musicians.
And how they wrote them down.
And how they wrote them down, where they wrote
them down.
Sort
of like Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, yeah, exactly. You know, on the back of a paper bag.
Exactly. You know? So upstairs, instead of a paper bag, we have handwritten lyrics from Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters on a paper towel, which is on display right now. I mean, it's these unique things that just really humanize some of these, our giants. We consider musicians our heroes, right? Depending wherever you are, but we bring these artifacts to life that humanize the musician. So outside of their instrument or their vocal talent or seeing, you know, the clothes that they might have worn at a tour that you were really moved by or inspired by, I think seeing those writings and having all of these pieces kind of converge in one space is really the impact that we want to have on all of our visitors. So there's something from everyone. I mean, I'm looking at LL Cool J's car right now. So, I mean, that's an inspiration to someone.
And by the way, I've seen that car. I was like, that's his car.
That's the car. His Audi 5000. Audi 5000. And that's, I mean, that again, to see these pieces, and that's an artifact where it has truly changed and transformed our cultural landscape, our colloquialisms. I mean, we say Audi 5000 as a term of, hey, I'm out of here. See you later. Peace out. So to see how music has really made that impact and then to garner and collect and acquire truly just all of these artifacts that have changed our scope, made a true impact, I think is really beautiful. And they live here at the Rock Hall.
All right. So now I got to reverse that question.
Yes.
What do they don't gravitate to? What would you look at and go, nah, I don't want it?
Huh. You know, it really...
Because we're living in the world now of NFTs.
NFTs,
which
exactly.
Is a little scary to me.
Yeah, it's a bit controversial, the world of NFTs, but I think there's still value. I'm not sure what folks aren't gravitating towards, but I know what we are. I mean, because it could be something that you may see as so insignificant. It could be a button, okay, or a pen that may, it's like, what context does this have? There was a piece of paper, just this torn, ragged permit, but it happened to be the permit that allowed Woodstock to happen in 1969, and this was signed, this little scribbly, I mean, this little raggedy.
Signed by Mr. Yazger?
You know, yeah.
Yazger's Farm, Yazger's oh my Farm. God.
You know, and so to see these pieces where it doesn't matter, to me, it's not the quality of the piece, or I mean, the quantity, or what, you know, the depth of that thing. It really, the depth can be captured in something that you may see so insignificant. So I really try not to put my own interpretation of importance on certain things. It's really, we all connect to something that's different.
So what's the thing that's the most surprising to you?
Ooh, the thing that's most surprising to me, gosh, is honestly how well these artifacts have been kept. The Rock Hall has an amazing repository. I can say it's over 1 million artifacts if you look at what we have in-house here in our vaults and in our library and archives, so including LPs and records and paper documents, all the way down to the costuming. So the way that we preserve our pieces, I think, is pretty shocking to me and really exciting, just to see that these pieces, we have to make sure that they are kept for future generations to celebrate and learn from.
Now, this is the year that Tina Turner got inducted, yes. Carole King got inducted, the Foo Fighters got inducted. Yes. What artifacts from them?
Oh, gosh. So
other than Dave Grohl's lyrics on the paper towel.
On the paper towel. And may he rest in peace, Tony Hawkins.
The drummer.
Yes, we have his drum kit here. So for fans who are interested, you know, and a huge fans of the Foos, their installation is absolutely beautiful. But from Tina, there is a beautiful, I mean, we have her dresses, we have the shoes, and we have just some amazing moments. Again, just to look at her fashion and look how fearless she was, just with her style. It's inspired so many people. The dress from Private Dancer is actually on display. She gave it to MTV VJ and was so kind, gave it to her after the DJ is complimenting her on how dope her dress is. And so she gave it to her, and then that DJ gave the dress back to us.
I only have one question about that dress. Who can fit in that dress today? Oh my God. That was the hot dress.
It's a hot dress, and we have it here. From Carole King, we have her Acrasonic piano, which she pinned and wrote most of her music on. Like, we have this piano in addition to handwritten lyrics from Carole, along with the check. She made a bet with her mom that, you know, one of her songs would not make it or chart the tops. Song charts beyond charts the top. I mean, the song is multi platinum. So, I mean, there are these beautiful anecdotes. And again, it goes back to these really
little
rare,
small things
from her childhood record player that we have. So, I mean, it's a really beautiful piece. And I think it's an awesome collection from this year's inductee class.
And, you know, you've got, what, 17 people nominated now?
17 people nominated.
So you're already on your artifact a treasure hunt.
We're already on a treasure hunt, but it'll be even more defined once they're announced in May. So we're really counting down. We're off to the races.
All right, really stupid soon. Question. How many guitars do you have here?
Oh, God. That's not a stupid question. That's actually a very, I would say, Peter. Peter, now you're going to catch me up here. Peter, let's give it over 300 guitars.
Okay.
Yeah. All on display at one time.
Of course.
So that's the thing. We have to rotate.
It's a rotating exhibit.
It's a rotating exhibit. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And that's just the beginning.
Only the tip of the iceberg.
My thanks to Nwaka. But the music doesn't stop at the Rock Hall. Cleveland has truly a world-class orchestra, and they also perform all over the world. Andre Grimelet thinks he knows the key to the orchestra's success. Andre, welcome.
Thank you.
But your history is fascinating to me, because talk about a guy who, you're like a fugitive from justice. You were in the New Jersey Symphony, then you went off to Australia, to Melbourne,
correct.
Then you found your way to Cleveland.
Exactly. And I'm from Montreal originally.
So listen to this accent, folks. It's a French-Canadian Aussie accent.
With a bit of New Jersey in it, yes.
All right, so forget about it.
Yes, I've been here for 6 years, and I'm planning on being here for a long time. This is an incredible place.
What makes it so great for you?
You know, the two words that come to me are accessible quality. You know, there's an incredible quality in Cleveland. You spoke about the orchestra, of course, but it's not just the orchestra. You know, we have an amazing museum. We're in this great rock hall. The schools, the medical centers, you know, everything that this city supports is of quality, yet it's incredibly accessible.
And people forget, this orchestra was founded in 1918. It's over 100 years old.
Indeed. The Cleveland Orchestra, you know, recognized widely as one of the finest in the world. You know, many people have said there's no finer orchestra in America today, and it's been famous really for several decades. But it's a very different orchestra than it was 100 years ago. It's a thoroughly modern orchestra that serves a community that has changed over the past decades, a really diverse community, but also an orchestra that tours the world. You know, so both a global citizen as an orchestra, but also very deeply engaged in this community.
And the works that you choose to perform, that's changed too.
You know, it has evolved. We play a lot, of course, of you know, quote unquote classical music, the classical repertoire, but we do a lot of modern music. You know, we own both Severance Music Center with Mandel Concert Hall, one of the great halls in the world, but also Blossom Music Center, where we collaborate with Live Nation and also present some rock and pop music in addition to playing orchestra concerts. So it's really a wide variety of offerings for the community here.
And training and education as well.
We do a lot of education. You know, this orchestra, right from the start in 1918, had a focus on education, and that has remained and expanded over the past decades. So, you know, thousands of kids have access to the orchestra. And more recently, we've expanded with digital resources like the rest of the world. We've you know, gone on a digital platform during the pandemic that is here to stay. So we're very proud of that.
Were you doing virtual concerts in the pandemic?
We were. We stopped for a few months, but then restarted in the fall of 20 with digital concerts without an audience. And in any way, we, you know, there was a silver lining of the pandemic for us. We took advantage of that time to accelerate some of that digital vision implementation that we had in mind prior to the pandemic.
And now you're back, you're open.
Now we're back. You know, it's people are coming back slowly. You know, some people are careful, but, you know, we have concerts every week. We have an incredible program this weekend, you know, starting this evening with Bartok and Beethoven, and, you know, same thing next week.
And the
week.
Cool thing is, if you're under 18, it's free.
It's free. And that's something we're very proud of, Peter. On any given night in Mandel Hall or at Blossom, you know, about 20% of the audience, is 25 years old or younger. And that's a surprise for a lot of people who come to the hall for the first time to see all these young people enjoying classical music. It's not a surprise to us. This music is universal.
And it's never ending.
It's never ending. You know?
But that gives you hope, though, when you see the age, median age go down.
There's a great future for the music. You know, what we need to make sure is we make the hall as accessible as possible. Ticket prices keep going down because price can be a barrier to entry.
How do you keep ticket prices going down?
We fundraise. You know, we have generous patrons for whom this is important to have a future. And they underwrite a lot of these concerts. So fundraising is a big part of running a modern orchestra.
You know, you mentioned the symphony in Melbourne. I remember the symphony in Sydney. And they, of course, performed in the Opera House. And on Tuesday mornings at 7 in the morning, if you went in, they'd let you go up on stage and play an instrument with them while they rehearsed.
That's pretty cool, actually.
I'm telling you, it was the best experience. No, let me tell you, the instrument they gave me. The instrument I could do no damage. You ready?
Which
the
one?
Triangle.
That sounds pretty good.
But you should do that here in Cleveland.
That sounds great, actually.
You know, interactive, right?
Absolutely.
I love it. So the season's up and running.
The season is up and running. We just announced our new season, our 22-23 season that will start in the fall. We announced our Blossom season starting this summer. So, yes, we're feeling good. You know, the orchestra is excited to be back on stage. We're going to New York.
York. We're returning to Carnegie Hall on June 1st. We haven't been there in a few years. We go once a year, usually. Returning to Miami in South Florida next season. Back to Europe, hopefully, in the fall, if all goes as planned. So it feels pretty good.
But if you're under 25, you'll find yourself right there on the front two rows of the auditorium.
There you go.
My thanks to Andre. Batter up. Remember the old Indian Stadium? I do. How about Jacobs Field? I remember that one as well. The names have changed on both the stadium and the team, now called the Guardians. But Cleveland baseball is as strong as ever, and Jeremy Feeder is batting cleanup.
How are you, man?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, how long were the Indians the Indians?
So the team name switched to the Indians in 1915, and that was after several years of being called the Naps because of player-manager Nap Lajoie. But come 1915, he wasn't on the team anymore, and they needed
these things happen.
Right. Father Time is undefeated in baseball.
All right, but then, so they were the Cleveland Indians from 1915 to?
To last year was our final season.
So about 106 years.
I'm not great at math, but I think that sounds right.
Hey, I'm not great at math either, but I think I passed that one. I know why you changed the name, but people in this town still think of them as the Indians, right?
Yeah. And
the mascot.
Right. Well, and Chief Wahoo's been gone for a few years now. Yeah. He hasn't been on the jersey for a few years, but yeah. And I think, you know, when you grow up, I'm from the area, and you watch 162 games a year, you know, you watch the movie Major League. It's something you're used to. It's something that, you know, you're used to saying every day. And
by the way, let's do some history here. Organized baseball in Cleveland goes back to 1865.
Right after the Civil War, and this is one of my favorite areas to study because, again, we're not New York or Boston, right? So there's not dozens and dozens of historians picking through your history. So there's a lot of unturned rocks in Cleveland. And for us, you know, you start seeing right after the Civil War, the organization of the Cleveland Forest Cities of the, you know, that early league. And the Cincinnati Reds love to, you know, talk about the 1869 Reds, but you know, Cleveland was paying guys in 1869 as well, just not as many and not fully professional as the Reds. So we're just getting off our series against the Reds, and you know, always like to compete with our interstate rivals.
I get it. Not every state has two teams like that.
Exactly, and we're lucky to have the best baseball team in Cleveland, I think, or in Ohio.
Oh, wait, let's stop right there. What did you say? The best baseball team in Ohio.
Yeah, you said
Cleveland, which brings me up to my next question. You know, everybody says, wait till next year. Last year, not so good for you guys.
Wasn't the best. We've had a great run with Terry Francona's manager since he came in 2013. Obviously, we've made it to a World Series. We're not going to discuss how that ended. It's still one of the things I'm trying to, you know, get through.
You're still in therapy on that.
Yeah, well, it was the longest drive home I've ever had. But under Terry, we've only had one sub-500 season, and we've had, you know, several playoff appearances, Cy Young winners, you know, all-stars. We had an all-star game here that, you know, resulted in Cleveland having another all-star MVP in Shane Bieber. So just a tremendous amount of success under Terry, and it's been a great era of Cleveland baseball.
I got to get into this at some point in our conversation today. The new rule changes. I don't know if I buy it. I mean, the shift?
Yeah, and I think that goes into effect next year. And again, shifting has been part of baseball for, you know, going back to Lou Boudreau.
When I play in a softball game, they put the shift on me. I'm a power left-hand hitter. They all move over to right field.
And Ted Williams was a great hitter, and that's why Boudreau would shift guys over to...
But he was an opposite side of... He hit both ways.
Right, and for Ted Williams, that was like, all right, challenge accepted, and he did it the other way. And, you know, there aren't too many Ted Williams out there, so it will be interesting to see how these rules, you know, affect batting averages and the way guys play.
And the number of innings?
So previous years we had the double headers, which were, you know, the 7-inning games. Hey. And at times, you know,
my favorite quote from Ernie Banks, let's play two.
He played for the team we're not going to talk about as well. But right. I mean, there's times where like, all right, these 7-inning games, I can get behind that. But, you know, baseball is such a traditional sport that, you know, when you make these changes, it takes time getting used to. And with everything, baseball's always been a sport of tinkering. They've always, you know, there's been a few things that have been standard, the base length and all that, but there's always been changes. The mound has changed, and it's a beautiful game insofar as it's never done being tinkered with.
I'm still going to try to get that name out, Guardians.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm at a point now just because I see it every day and I write it and look at it. I'm getting more and more used to it. And, you know, I can't tell the difference now. I look at the new C we have that's on our hats and around the ballpark and, you know, I'm used to it. But it's one of those things we understand that it's going to be a while and everyone moves at their own pace. So we're aware of that.
Okay, I'm going to ask what might sound like a self-serving question for you, but maybe not. Are Clevelanders baseball fans?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, everyone talks about Cleveland being a Browns town, and I get it. People love sports in Cleveland, but...
Well, you can talk about the Browns town, but let's be honest. You want to talk about, you know, lack of victories. We can talk about that for a long time with the Browns.
We'll go back to baseball, and we'll say...
Well, let's talk about the dogs in the end zone, right? I mean, they're lonely guys out there.
And you know, I'm a native Clevelander, and you want to see your colleagues succeed. You want to see Cleveland in the best light. And, you know, I think that they're, you know, they're hopefully we're getting to a place where all three Cleveland teams are going to be continual playoff teams. I mean, the Cavs had a heck of a season that no one thought they were going to have. So I think Clevelanders, you know, we kind of live and die by our sports teams. And
I'm going to say something that's going to date me. I relate to the Cleveland Browns as Jim Brown.
Yeah.
Because he was the Cleveland Browns to me.
The greatest running back going out at, you know, when he wanted to go out.
And I'll give you another one. I remember this game so well. Bernie Kosar, Ernie Biner, and the fumble on the goal line.
And I was born in 86. So that stuff for me, luckily, is just, I hear my dad talk about it. And you know, I said, Dad, where were you when you were watching this game? And
I mean, I've seen that on the highlight reel so many times because it was a slam dunk and they blew it.
And there's this, we like to call it the montage of misery, where before the Cavs kind of, you know, broke the curse. I don't believe in curses per se, but it'd show, you know, the fumble.
But you're aware drive. Of the curse.
The Jordan shot, the 97 World Series. And, you know, and I think Cleveland can get piled on. And that's why I think, you know, we're, as Clevelanders, we wear this, you know, we're tough, we're resilient. You know, we know what outsiders might think of us. But when people come here, I think they quickly realize, man, this is a heck of a town and there's a lot going on for us. And, you know, what you see necessarily, you know, if people talk about the river burning, it's like we can make fun of ourselves. But now if someone else is making fun of us, that's where we draw the line.
Listen, I promise not to sing the lyrics to the Randy Newman song. But the bottom line is, I'll be honest, so many of my friends, when I told them I was coming to Cleveland, said, who did you piss off? I'm saying, what are you talking about? I've been coming for 35 years, 40 years. I love this place, right? Because there's so many different neighborhoods and so much stuff to do.
Everyone's just friendly. I think, you know, Clevelanders, that Midwestern friendliness, and, you know, there's all these places to eat and drink. And, you know, I grew up in a Polish-American family. My grandfather played in a polka band, recorded on Capitol Records, you know, so it's like there's these cool, you know, ethnic conflicts.
Did you dance the polka?
Not very good at it. My mom was good at it, and my aunt and an uncle.
Did he play the accordion?
So my grandfather, he played the accordion, was drafted into Korea, and was paralyzed in Korea. Oh, and when he came back, he picked up the clarinet and Ray Budzilic, and that was his name. And he had a big band in Capitol Records, toured the country. And again, you know, it's one of those Cleveland stories, I think, that
he toured the country on Saturday nights.
Yeah, he was gone and out in Rochester and Dearborn and
Pennsylvania.
Big, oh my Pennsylvania, God, absolutely. Polka scene, yep.
Yep, amazing. So is there going to be a polka resurgence here in Cleveland?
Well, you know, the day after Easter, we celebrate Dingus Day. And I know you had Sean from Happy Dog here. They're a big host of the Dingus Day festivities. So it's a big, you know, it's like a Polish St. Patrick's Day, I guess, where everyone's out and enjoying pierogies and kielbasa and all that stuff. And they play polkas. There's the DJ Kishka guy and the Chardon Polka Band. So Cleveland's got a very rich polka scene still.
So there's Bat Day and Ball Day. Is there Polka Day at Guardians?
You know what? I would be thrilled. I have a great photograph of Mudcat Grant, who recently passed away. My grandfather was playing a polka concert at the old ballpark, and Mudcat's behind the fence with him with a microphone singing. So I ended up tweeting that out a while ago. And, you know, again, one of those things about baseball, going back to baseball, is it connects generations and connects, you know, different strands of your life together that you might not even, you know, realize. And that's the beauty of baseball, I think.
That's right. And the thing is, we did our show from Cooperstown. We've done it a couple of times. just to walk in that Hall of Fame and just look at those stories. Unbelievable.
Oh, Cooperstown. I took my family out there right before COVID, and you could spend, you know, a week out there. And I'm actually headed back out there in July. One of our old broadcasters, Jack Rainey, will be recognized with the Ford C. Frick Award. So really proud of that. And again, getting our history elevated so fans are aware of this rich history. Granted, you know, I always tell people, you can't judge a team's history just on World Series titles alone, because you're going to miss out on great
history. And all the other losses.
And that's, you know, and there was that quote where baseball is, it's beautiful because it's meant to break your heart.
My thanks to Jeremy, to Andre Grimolet, to Ruaka Onwusu, and to Greg Harris. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast, Cleveland edition. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Eye on Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis-Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Eye on Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Eye on Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.